Blog Talk Radio.
Hold it now! For another year, We Talk Production is bringing you information from people, from black folks, from different avenues to discuss the solutions for the black community. We Talk Production is one of the few black-owned networks that provide information to address solutions. We just don't talk about issues. We address them. We come up with solutions for the black community. Presents Black Urban America. All you folks that are listening by laptop or computer, you may dial 516-531-9540. 516-531-9540. And press one if you have a comment or a question for our guest tonight. The lineup, as usual. On Tuesday, we have myself. My name is Kenny Jones, and I'm the host of Black Urban America. On Wednesday, we have The Cutting Edge. The host is Michonne Williams, and her co-host is Justin. On Thursday, we have The Port of Harlem Magazine by William A. Young. On Saturday, to finish up the week, we have Provocative Thought with Carlton Sneed. All shows, all of them, begin at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. As you know, our society has changed tremendously in 2020. And from what my understanding, as we know how society used to be, a lot of economists, educators, scientists, people from all different perspectives express that we'll never go back to the lifestyle that we know it, that we knew. And one of the fields that have been affected by society changes is the field of education. Schools are no longer the way they were. And it's being predicted they may not go back the way it was due to this pandemic. Now, students are either learning virtually, online, or they're going to school part-time and learning online part-time. Some states are opening up the schools. Most states are not. The kids are home learning online, which affects the parents or parents. Tonight, my guest is an educator, and she probably is teaching online, teaching her students online, and she's going to discuss virtual education. virtual learning. And her name is Miss Sharon Jackson. Welcome to Black Urban America, Miss Jackson.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Good, good. So tell me, I was looking up, some people have concern about virtual education, and some people are saying that there's no problems with virtual education. What is your thought? What is your thought about virtual learning?
Well, overall, I can understand why we're hearing a lot of complaints. Shut it down. There's like people are like, just shut it down. Just let them back in the school, because it's new. And we weren't like eased into this gradually. This was something that was like we had to do this or nothing because of the situation that we're in. So people already have the pressures of what comes along with COVID-19 and the things that are coming out of those experiences with unemployment, lack of childcare. So all of these homes are being, families are being impacted by those things. So I get it when I hear, shut it down. Just put them back in the school. Just put them back.
So, are there dangers? Because, all right. It's hard for adults. I still go to work and we got to wear our face masks all day. You know, all during the shift. Our clients got to wear a mask. They can't even come in the building without a mask on. I mean, if it's difficult for adults to keep their masks on, you expect children, 7, 6, 9, 10, to keep their masks on all day?
I mean, generally that's the expectation. That's what the stated expectations are. About the masks the whole time, except for lunchtime. I'm sure it's different for different districts and schools, because once again, this isn't something that was standardized, but we do see that some schools kind of, some systems pay attention to what other systems are doing and learn from some of their successes and also from some of their opportunities for, you know, to try that again a different way. Yeah, that happens.
Do you think that this could be the new norm for what, from compared to in the past? If this the new normality of providing learning for people. Because now, online education is not really new. Ever since we had the internet, there have been colleges that offer online classes. But, you know, you got to be very disciplined and self-aware to participate in online classes. Now it's in the high school, middle school, junior high, kindergarten. Do you think this is the new normality of providing education?
I think it is. And I think this will be for some people, a lot of people, the primary way, the main way that they get their information, the main way that they get their education. And I see that, but the other piece of that is, as you said, you know, there have been distance learning programs for some time. So, but then people have to be disciplined to do that. So that is one of the things, as a parent, I would have to look at that and say, well, look, is my son ready to be placed in those environments? If so, good. Let's see what it looks like. Let's try it. If I see, no, there seems to be a lot of dependence on other things and other people, then we need to start creating opportunities for students for the student in the house to have some independent types of assignments and get some things done. So that doesn't really have anything to do with school. I think we've had some generational changes, and I'm not criticizing, but I've just noticed some differences in how what we were expected to do and learn and how we were expected to learn and what a lot of the students today are expected to do. So
how do
did,
you
I think
this
more.
Affects, how do you think this affects the average black family, the black home?
In a couple of different ways. There are different scenarios, even when we say the average black home. For one, we can see where if the parents are home, especially during the quarantine, we have one or both parents at home in some situations. In others, and I've talked to parents who say that, you know, they need their children home, their older children home at a certain time so that they can babysit and the parent can take the next shift at the second job that they have. So a lot of this depends on the state that we were in when COVID-19 hit. So that's one of the things that we have to think about. Some people were already teetering on the brink financially, okay? And so now, or even health-wise. And so now, you know, facing this, with this pandemic, that there's even more uncertainty for families and the children who come in. So my approach in terms of interaction with the students is to allow room for growth, allow room for people to have some time to kind of pull themselves together if that's what they need, if they need to talk to someone in the building about what's going on with their lives, then that's something that, you know, I look out for. I look out for those things.
You speak of interaction. Do you feel now your eyes has been open to both worlds, in class and online. Do you feel students, especially black students, need in-class learning?
Yes. But I think we need both. It's like one of the things I found out from someone who's and I don't remember her name, but she specializes in like cyber security, and she's an African American woman. She's black, and she was speaking at a school that one of my friends teaches in, and she was encouraging the students to come and get that kind of education, not just go for the standards that have been on the list for years and years. But, and she said that the black boys who come in and pick that up, especially if they're already good at math, that they you know, really do well in that field. And so that's one of the things that I think we need both. And I think this is the best thing about having access to a virtual setting. And I also teach in person. I do both at the same time. And that's one of the things that we're learning, how to, what, not necessarily multitasking, but how to manage both and to do well with both. And I know we're not there yet. And I tell my students even before Christmas, like before the Christmas break, I was like, you know, at the end, you know, we talked about Christmas, what they're going to do and those kinds of things. And I said, you know, forgive me for the things that my mistakes. I know I haven't gotten it all right. I'm still learning too. And you're worthy of my efforts in terms of improving. So like my humanity has always been a part of, you know, the culture in my classroom. And it really has been since we started with the virtual learning.
Okay, folks, if you have a question or a comment, just press 1, or you could dial 516-531-9540 and press 1. Michonne from Cutting Edge, do you have a question for Ms. Jackson? Michonne, this is Ms. Jackson. Ms. Jackson, this is Michonne, host of
Hello.
The Cutting Edge.
Hello.
Hello.
Good to meet you.
Hello. Hello, it's nice meeting you. I do have some questions. Does virtual learning mean unequal learning for inner city students who, you know, before COVID had a problem by having access to, you know, equal education?
Yes. Yes. That's what happened. And when that happened, because I do surveys, I asked. And it's not always something that I do, like, out loud. I do also do things where students can check boxes and, you know, nobody needs to know their business. But, yes, any of those spaces wherein our children haven't had access, then definitely, you know, it does impact them, I think, in a negative way when we come at it from the same space as we would students who have had access, definitely.
Okay, and are students struggling with isolation?
Some students seem to be struggling with that, and that's a concern of ours as well, well, of mine and a lot of other educators. And in the sense that when they brought them into the school, the students who came into the in-person setting, there were very few students in there because people were trying to figure out how to handle the COVID-19, you know, concerns, as well as bringing the students back in and getting them to socialize with their friends. And there were some who just felt like, well, nobody's here. I'll just go back to virtual. So there's that. And then there's the piece where I do see some students who have a little group or little cohort that kind of move together, and they seem to be, I think, more grounded in the educational experience. And rather than feeling isolated. And I teach in a rural area, so a lot of the students, they live quite far away and are on the bus a long time coming to school and might not see their friends when they're at home.
That's
wow. Does virtual learning work for every student?
I don't know that, like, 100% virtual learning works for every student. That's why when people ask me, when people say, it's not working, get rid of it, I ask, what is it that's not working? And sometimes the thing that's not working is that a student isn't really motivated to even try it. You know, they want to do something else. Now, if we'll remember, many of our students were off for 6 months, and maybe now more, before we open the schools back up and say, okay, we're going to try this, even virtually. To take especially, I would say, teens and say, well, now we're going to go back to school. Now you're going to have to wear a mask. That's a shift for them. That's a major shift. And the other piece of that is, some of the things that aren't working with virtual weren't working when they were in person either. But a lot of people don't think about that. The same things that they were doing or not doing in class then are the same things that they're not doing in class now.
And they just have more freedom about it. Earlier, you were saying that As an educator, you have to adjust as well as the students have to adjust. Well, is it are difficult to deliver your curriculum and to the students? Is it well, Michelle already asked about the social experience, but is it easy to deliver your curriculum, or is it difficult?
Some things are difficult, and then some things are easy. So one of the things that's easy is to kind of ask questions or assign things. That's easy. The harder part is the social aspect for me. Now, I'm an older person, so I'm accustomed to a live, you know, audience, and a lot of the students turn their video cameras off, and so you can't see who it is, but you can read names. I can read names, but because I don't really know them, because they turn, I can't see them. It's kind of difficult. It's kind of difficult. So
what I understand, you know, teachers are uncomfortable to show their home environment.
Oh, I would think that would be a concern for a lot of people. Now, we're in the building teaching. There's been very few times I've had to be home. We're in the building, and the students are online, because remember, I have in person students and virtual students.
Right.
Speaking of your colleagues
and they turn the cameras on, off, and what have you, how do the average teacher, okay, and I know they've probably been commenting online in different chat rooms, and you have your home teacher ed spiel and what have you. How are the teachers feeling about this virtual education now, the shift, as you call it? How do they really feel about the shift where they've been trained to provide the in-class, the traditional in-class education methods?
That's a good question. Not because I can't answer it, but because it speaks to some things that I think we don't know about teaching. One thing about teaching that I think my experience across the board is that a lot of teachers are into technology of some sort and enjoy acquiring that knowledge. And most teachers, I think, are excited about that. A lot of the technology makes things easier. It makes things prettier. So people tend to want to know more about those things. The other thing is, like you said, it's like when you're teaching and you can't see the person, the people, then I think that's a thing, because we look for certain cues. We look for people to go with the eyes, the brows raised, or the mouth turns down. Okay, something's off. Okay, I need to kind of check.
Oh, the kids falling asleep.
Yeah, you know, they're asleep. Or guess what? They might not even be there.
Right.
Their camera's
off. Yeah, they
off.
Might turn it on. They might turn it on and say, I'm here, and they just go off and do something else.
Exactly. So I have to go through at the beginning, the middle, and the end to say, so-and-so, are you there? Are you there? If you're having trouble with your microphone, go ahead and put that in the chat. Just respond in the chat. You know, type something in.
It must be really strange when Michelle mentioned before about if a student's struggling and you know human nature, some people might be somewhat resistant and say, hey, look, I have a question, or they feel their question might be stupid, so they may not even ask them.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the worst that I've seen that. This is the worst. And usually I'm good at helping students if they're having trouble with something. I can ask some questions and then say, oh, okay, I know what's happening. You think you have to write your whole paper in one sitting. Okay, no, just write a draft. It doesn't have to be perfect. There are students who, they want that level of detail right away. And so I have to talk them down so that they can get it done. And the students who care like that about their work and they're that concerned, I just have to take that time whenever I can. So usually it's after school, and we'll come into my Zoom room, and I'll say, okay, so what's going on? Well, what'd you do? Well, what happened when you did that? Okay, well, don't do that anymore. Let's try something else, and not focus on the grade per se, but the student's process and the student's confidence. So that's the same in in-person teaching as well. Be human and connect with people. Sometimes just your humanity is something that works for people who just need that kindness or consideration. Just like manners and how you taught manners, and we eventually taught how to kind of package a message so that people can receive it, and that's a huge part.
I'm looking. While you were speaking, responding to my last question, a thought just came in. Historically, when I say our children, I talk about Black students. Black students, the majority of Black students in the United States had difficulty with the educators, had difficulty with the educational environment, especially in predominantly Black neighborhoods. How is this process? Now, it's always been the distant. How this process either going to expand the distant or bring it a little closer? What is your perspective on that?
I think it depends on where they are, because if they're in, you said like majority Black neighborhoods.
Predominantly Black neighborhoods such as Baltimore, Atlanta, Compton, Houston, Chicago, Southside, where it has been. And where it has been demonstrated that there's difficulty between the educational system and the Black student. Will this virtual education improve it or disable it?
I think it's going to do however people use the opportunity. And what I'm saying about, what I mean by that is, when you say Chicago, Atlanta, Baltimore, these places didn't just like overnight become what they are. And there are so many forces that undergird the situations that exist there that virtual education itself is under siege. How can you get an educational moment if you've had to stay up all night to make sure you weren't harmed, or if you had to go somewhere late at night to get something for the family and bring that back, whether it's food or some clothing, whatever it is. So this is why when they talk about reparations, this is why we need those kinds of not just conversations, but to ask, that's politics. I'm not supposed to do politics.
Yeah, go ahead, finish. Go ahead, go on. Because we discuss politics on this show quite often. So go ahead.
We need to be honest about where those things come from, who is behind those things, and to address that. The fear of them, whoever it is, that the fear of them is not working. So we need to be able to tell the truth and stand firm on that and operate from a point of truth that makes sense. You know, this thing about this irrationality and feeding it to the students, it doesn't help them. It doesn't help our children, you know, feeding it to the children or just going along with whatever it is. It does need to be addressed in a way that makes sense. It's powerful. It's clear. The children are trained to, you know, take over when it's time for them to step into those shoes and to continue the movement. And, you know, I was taught that in an Atlanta public school system by people who came through. And, you know, Andrew Young would come by and, oh, this is him, this is Andrew Young. Okay, everybody now, remember we saw him at the something with politics. You saw him at Jimmy Carter and something, you know, those people came through, Mayor Jackson came through, you know, and as children we're like, oh, okay, well, hey, that's great. As an adult, when I look back on, you know, those years and that kind of, the adulation and the respect that we were giving them. Now I can look back at those things with a sense of complexity. So we can talk about that in that time.
Okay. All right. You know, Michonne, I know you got a question. She called out your town, Michonne. Go ahead.
Okay. How do you make individualized connections to your students? Doing, you know, online learning.
Oh, yes. With that, I ask in the beginning, you know, what are their interests? What are you good at? I have them create playlists for me. I do a lot of things in the beginning, and I do that because they're like, okay, great, I know myself, I know me, so I can do that. So that's one thing. The other thing is when they have a stumbling block with something, then I go back to, what are you good at? Okay, well, let's work from that point of view or vantage point. You're good at drawing. Okay, so we're going to take the words away. Don't worry about the words. And just draw. Come back, and we can still analyze that because that's a visual text. So that's one of the ways. Another way is I ask people, what are you interested in? What are you going to do after this? So just me asking means something, but when they see me following up or when they see me saying, okay, look, those SAT vouchers are going to be in the counselor's office on Thursday, so you need to go there before you come here to my class because you qualify for the voucher. You can have the voucher. You don't have to pay. So sometimes I'll say, oh, you're my mother. You're my mother. And I say, you know what? I'm that auntie who has your mother's back. You know, your mom is working hard. You know, dad is trying to get it done. Your grandmother is doing this, that, and the other. I'm just in here as the auntie saying, hey, you know what to do. You're going to do it. By the time you get home, you will have finished those things. So I develop them, and a lot of times students don't get it. The new students come in, and I'll say, well, what do you need help with? You seem to be struggling. And they don't want to tell me, and this other students will say, it's okay. She's really asking you. You can tell her. They don't want to let that problem go or share that they have a problem. So, you know, and I tell them about my attention span and the things I've had to go through to work on that, losses in my life, those kinds of things that keep people looking out for me. So some of them go on, and every now and then I'll get, like, something from them where they befriend me, And so that means somebody needs something because they know they can't just be my friend and hang out in my Facebook page or something. But that means, hey, I need a referral, a reference for a job. I'm getting ready to take a course. I'm really scared. You know, what do I do? You know, stuff like that.
Okay, remember, press one question. If you have a question. Press one if you have a comment or question. Go ahead, Michonne.
Okay, as an educator, do you feel like you're supported by your school administration?
Oh, she went quiet. Uh-oh, that's the answer. That's the answer.
I was sending the message mentally. I hope you received that.
Okay.
I've worked in many different places. Okay. I've even worked overseas. You know, there were a lot of teachers who went to UAE for a while. Okay, so I did that a couple of years. So, because I like learning and seeing what different people are doing, what is the things that are working for them that, you know, I need to learn and do better with. So usually my interaction with administration is when I need something that I want to do something they haven't done before or they don't know how to do it, I have a way of framing that, packaging the request, so that I can get a yes. So that's usually when those things happen. And I always say that about my principal and how they know that when they see me, I probably have some idea for how to figure whatever it is out, and they want to be able to say yes. So it's that. But it's not like a day-to-day trying to be in their faces or be people's favorite. You know, I'm not anybody. I don't need to be a person's favorite, you know, to do my job. So I tend to be a little more independent.
Well, let me ask you this, Ms. Jackson. Before I go on with my questions that I have for you, I want to ask your perspective on this. It has been stated by different educators across this country that we need more black children interested in STEM. And we need more black children to go into these fields because there are other cultures that are dominating these fields. And where the global is going, all right, we need more black children going into STEM. What is your ideology on that?
Okay. My ideology on that is, if it's true that in our country, prisons are built based on what the third grade test scores look like for our boys,
right?
We need to, the people that they go to get those things approved, we need to be in those kinds of spaces. Because
right. As
long as we're doing something else, then people are finding other things to do to us, okay? So as long as we're doing something else, people will find other things to do to us. I mean, and it's gotten so bad now that some of it I don't even recognize as a part of what I remember or something from even last year compared to some of the things I'm seeing today. So here's one of the things about that, because people, we talk about that a lot. But one of the things about that is, so I teach high school. I've always taught high school, but I was a substitute teacher before that. So I taught all of the grades. I've done that. So when I'm talking to a teenager, an 11th grader or a 12th grader, and I say, well, what are you doing after this? And the person says, well, I'm going to play football. Okay, Where are you going to play football? I'm going to play at UGA. Okay. So when they had their juniors day, you were invited, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, I wasn't invited. So tell me, what position do you play on a football team? And they don't have answers. So what I'm saying about that is there's a lot that's happening in our homes. And so when they don't have access to conversation that makes sense, reasoning, it's difficult, not just in STEM, it's difficult in everything. When you're big, you know, you're older now, you're big, oh, you're a man now. No, probably not, if those things have not been cultivated in the child. So,
do you think black parents today are having difficulty in cultivating their children, exploring with their children about their futures?
It's a mix. It's a mix. I had a situation with a student who kind of dropped off, wasn't really, you know, attending school as much, advanced student, very bright, also an athlete. But then I noticed that there were some other children hanging around him. He was spending time with them, and I said, I know what this is, because if we take a political situation, and the same with mass incarceration, when you take that many men out of our lives, then somebody's going to, you know, miss that. And guess who? That's all of us feeling. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Well, you can thank Joe Biden for that. Since he's president, he might put more of us in prison.
So, you know, I remember talking with the parents.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at the end of the day, it had been a long day, and they were saying, well, we don't know what's going on, it's great, whatever. And I said, I said, do you want the lie or the truth? And they looked at each other. And then the dad said, the truth. And I told him, he's hanging out with people. I said, he has two parents. Two parents who come up here, they're trying to figure it out. I said, but the people around him don't have that. So they're hanging out with him to get access to you, parents. And this is high school. And the mother said, is that why they come over, even when they know he's not there, he's at football practice? That's why.
Well, let me ask you another question. Before I get back to my lines of question, I've always been critical of the educational process in our cities, such as Baltimore, such as Brownsville in New York, such as Compton, such as Atlanta, such as Chicago. I've always been a little critical. Why have I been so critical? Because now we have black commissioners. Black educational commissioners. Now we got black superintendents of schools. Now we have black principals. And nothing has changed. We have a high rate of black boys dropping out of high school. We have a high rate of black children not being involved in the classroom. Why aren't we... Since we got so many black principals across this country, so now we got so many black superintendents in this country, why aren't the curriculum changing to encourage our children to become more involved in their education and change the curriculum the way it's been for the past 75 years, so it can match the global world, such as STEM? Why have the curriculum have not changed in predominantly black community schools?
Okay. Okay. I have that one. When you say black, are we talking about skin?
When I say black, you're asking when I say black, what do I mean?
Yes.
I'm talking about descendants, people that are black folks that have been here for generations, African Americans, descendants of slaves, and the African American experience.
Okay, so all right, I'm down with Adolf too. I was at the conference and everything. Okay. So
I'm not really
down
with ADOS, but I feel that why should we, and I know we're getting off the subject, why should we continue to ask a group, ask a government for something that never had laws for us? Why should we continue to beg the government and other groups for money and resources instead of creating our own economic resources? So that's the only reason why I'm not down with ADOS, because I feel it's begging again. All right. Going back to my question, why have the curriculum has not changed from 75 years ago?
Right. Okay. So there's a push, there's push and pull. Okay. So there are people who are pushing for this change. And then there are people who look like the people who are pushing, talking to the people and saying things that sound pretty. And when they say these things that sound pretty, or they say, hey, I got you. Just give me 4 years. Okay, just give me 4 more years. And there are people who are mesmerized.
And that's another group of students. And that's another group of students that's not prepared for the globalization of our children. Another group of black children that's not prepared.
Yeah, I think
you talk about 4 years, and I'm a freshman in high school. By the time I become a senior, I'm going through the same old process. And now with this all virtual learning, now you're really going to lose more, especially our black boys. Ms. Jackson?
Oh, okay. I thought you were asking a question. But
I'm still on the same question. I just had a little contemporary moment.
When you say, why do we ask government? Because that's who owes the money. Everyone else goes to the government. Everybody else. The only people who are voting and not asking are guess who? And it's our money. So this is... It's the thing that I think the most interesting is that it can be 75 years of something that doesn't work, but still it's in place. I get that, but...
It's called insanity.
It's called what?
No, just go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's okay. I mean, I understand the passion. I mean, that's the only reason I'm, like, still a teacher, because this really matters to me, and it, you know, it's a significant thing to kind of take on, because people almost never have anything good to really say about a teacher, so it's that space, and I just know a lot of teachers who are just so passionate and you know, really want to see the transformation of our students. So from this one place to the next place. And but that's why I teach high school, because I felt that a lot of my friends didn't finish in college. The first round was rough for them, whether it was the math and or the language arts, the writing. And I was like, well, I can do that. I can help with that. Yeah.
Anyone know something? Anyone know something? A lot of freshman courses deal with talk about sentence structure, the basic math, and what have you, coming right out of high school. And most of our children are not prepared. And I'm coming from an urban perspective. I'm coming from an urban observation. Most of our children, and that's why a lot of professional parents, a lot of parents move out of our neighborhoods and go into other people's neighborhoods to become more diverse and multicultural. It's because of the educational system. So if the educational system catch up in these urban areas like Baltimore, Compton, Newark, New Jersey, Atlanta, what have you, maybe these black parents will not move out. Because when these black parents move out, they're taking away resources, okay, that could be used. And what do we have left? And so maybe, you know, we could keep these black professionals in the community if we improve the curriculum in the educational system. And it may sound simple, but it is system. Well, it's simple because all we need is the resource. And like you said, we have a lot of teachers that are compassionate, that believe in this idea, that want this transformation, but we still doing the same old thing as we did in the 50s or 60s. Michonne, you have a question before the guest leave?
I do. What can be done about the, he just spoke on this, but the educational gap that a lot of black students face? Because like he says, basically it does have to do with wealth. Poor neighborhoods have lower quality schools. And like he said, a lot of people do move away because they want their kids in the better schools. So what can a school do, since it hasn't done much for these inner cities so far? What can be done, really?
There are different models, but the gap. Y'all got me talking politics now. Look, I've been looking for a job. Okay, so the gaps are not academic. Hear me out, please. The gaps are not academic. They're social. They're social. And what I mean by that is the people that we have missing from our lives, our students' lives, our friends' lives, those are the people who I saw as a little girl growing up in Atlanta who had the lawn mower businesses. These were people who were still taking in laundry. These were the people who were working. These were men who were working. And I had an experience that most of my students cannot imagine that. They can't see that. So a lot of what's going on has nothing to do with the academic. We create the culture of learning as families. We do that as families, and we do it sometimes it's not blood related. but it's some kind of kinship we have with someone else, and we believe in them, and we know that they can do it. That is the thing. I've gotten more results out of students who couldn't really spell anything, and I teach high school now, but they would make the effort because my expectation is there. Oh, yeah, you're going to do my work.
I have a question. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we don't have that much time. But, okay, why would someone pass someone to high school, junior high, and they read it second or third grade level? Because that is just really crazy to me.
And that's been going on for decades.
Somebody dropped the ball a long time ago, but everybody since then is dropping the ball also, because how can someone make it that far?
Well,
and like, people obviously, the teachers don't care responsibly.
You don't have much time, and it's definitely not the teachers. We can talk offline about this one day if you ever feel like putting
Jess, what we're going to do, I'm thanking you for coming on the show, and we're going to invite you back in the immediate future. I will stay in contact with you, especially, you know, if I have a guest that's going to talk about education, I will make sure you get a notice. And I appreciate you for coming on the show. I thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Happy New Year and Happy Kwanzaa. Okay.
Happy New Year and Happy Kwanzaa. Take care.
All right, that's it. Our first show of the year. And I thank everybody for tuning in. Even though y'all didn't want to ask any questions. And I'm sorry we didn't get through the whole virtual education, but our guest said something that just took me down avenue that I couldn't get off. All right. So, Michonne, what's up for tomorrow?
Well, I will be talking about building wealth. And I'm going to be talking about one or two ways to build wealth.
Great.
Since it's January, a new month, a new year, we need to get our finances right.
That's right.
We can create generations of wealth.
That the other day. As always, audience, I am because we are. We are because I am. Tune in for the Cutting Edge tomorrow, part of Harlem on Thursday and Saturday.
Hold it now!